And good morning and welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California Irvine campus. We're on the web at KUCI.org and we're at iTunes at College Radio. Today is Wednesday, April 18th, 2012. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett and I'm so happy today to have for the entire hour my good friend Beth Howard. Besides being known as the Pie Evangelist, Beth is a veteran journalist. Her outdoor adventure and profile articles have appeared in Elle, Shape, Travel and Leisure, Sports Illustrated for Women, and other magazines, with assignments requiring her to skydive, dog sled, scuba dive with sharks, and compete in the Eco Challenge, a 10-day multi-sport wilderness race. During this period, she moved to New York for a senior editor position with Sports Traveler and simultaneously co-hosted Inline America, an Outdoor Life Network TV series about skating in which she appeared for two seasons. She's also worked as a PR executive, and she worked for a Hyatt mega resort in Hawaii where she assisted with a Bob Hope Christmas special, and then for Rogers & Cohen in Los Angeles where she did the publicity launch for the original Beverly Hills 90210 TV series. But Beth considers her greatest PR achievement getting the New York Times to do a story on the small company she started at the age of 25, importing zebra-striped tins she designed filled with roasted Kenya coffee. My multifaceted friend is here today to talk about her new book, Making Peace, a memoir of love, loss, and pie, published by Harlequin. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Barbara.
Gosh, I didn't know some of these things about you.
Yes, well, I'm a Gemini. That's my excuse.
I
try lots of different things.
Well, I love that you're a Gemini, and I love your book. And I would just love to hear you just, you know, give an intro about it to the listeners who perhaps haven't heard of it or haven't read it.
Well, I will tell you this. I always wanted to write a book, and not this one. This is not a book I would have wanted to write if I had a choice. It's about the death of my husband. He died suddenly at the age of 43 of a ruptured aorta. Actually, you met Marcus. We came
yes,
to your writer's salon down in Corona Del Mar one time, and it just sent my life into a tailspin like no other. And I spent the next 1 year just grieving. And basically, this book is about the journey of my grief, and ultimately about pie, how pie aided me in my grieving process, and it sort of healed me, if you will, and so a lot of it is really, it's sort of a mix between grief and pie and somehow with a little dash of hope added there at the end.
Well, you know, when I was starting to get to know you, I recall that you were working on another memoir.
Right. Yeah, I was working on a memoir about pie, how, so I have to sort of back up a little
sure,
bit to explain that, because I had been a journalist, as you described, but I think what wasn't really listed in that bio was that I left the print world to go to the dot-com world in 1999. They dangled a fat salary under my nose, and I thought, that looks good. So I went to San Francisco and worked really at the epicenter of the whole dot-com movement there, and it was very high energy, great fun, but really hard work and very long hours in front of a computer, and I just got so tired of... Well, you know, you're sitting in a cubicle and you're emailing your coworker right next to you. No one's actually having a physical conversation, even though you're sitting 2 feet apart. You know, it was that kind of world that was just like, I've got to go do something else, you know, something I wanted to go do something with my hands. Plus, my bosses were saying that they wanted us to create more virtual worlds and make people feel like they were actually out sailing and mountain climbing. And here was an outdoor adventure sports website, and you know, my philosophy was, well, I would hope that my writing would motivate people to go out and do these things and try something new and face their fears, but not to my bosses. They wanted people to spend more time on the computer. Well, I had had enough of that. So when I quit, I walked away from a six-figure salary, and I said, I just feel like doing something tactile. I want to do something with my hands, something that will engage my senses. And I said, I want to make pie. And I have to say, I was so afraid of quitting that job, but then I actually noticed a trace of envy in my bosses when I quit, and I think they wished that they could get out from under as well. So I moved from San Francisco back to Los Angeles, and I found a little pie-baking job. Lo and behold, I was sort of kidding when I said that. I didn't know I was serious, but then I went to a gourmet takeout place in Malibu called Malibu Kitchen, And I was told they had really good pie, but I went there and they didn't have any, so I volunteered to make it. And then I got a minimum wage pie baking job. So, oh boy. So I spent a whole year in doing what I call my pie baking sabbatical. And so essentially that was the book I was working on up until the time Marcus died. I've been working on it for 2 or 3 months, and I was halfway through my manuscript, and I had an agent for it, and the story was just basically how you too can simplify your life, you know, follow your passion, and you too can make minimum wage and, you know, go into debt. I don't know. So maybe that wasn't such a compelling, or marketable storyline, but at any rate, the agent said, you know, this is lacking conflict and tension, you know, needs more drama, and then, boom, you know, my husband dies, and...
And you had it.
So, yeah, that's the hard part. So I did use a little bit of the content from that first manuscript, and basically what I used from it is the lesson I got from my pie teacher in Malibu, because I got this pie baking job without having any baking experience, and you know, this thing about pie is that, you know, you don't have to be a pastry chef to make pie. The pioneers made pie. It's this very simple thing, and in that regard, I like what pie represents, you know, how it mm-hmm, represents mm-hmm. simplicity and low technology and, you know, a less complicated existence. And, you know, sometimes you even see recipes where people are making the pie recipe so fussy, and, you know, you have to refrigerate your bowl, and you have to refrigerate your dough overnight, and all these, like, you must do this. And so my whole approach to pie is something very, very simple, and keep it basic, and what would the pioneers do? So I'm digressing into my favorite subject of pie, of course, but I do write about all of that in the book. I write about the process of making pie, making dough with your bare hands, and just the whole sort of instructional thing. So there's a little mix, like I said, my book is a mix of everything about how, you know, I had turned to pie once before to simplify my life, you know, to sort of this antidote to high tech, and then I turned to it again, sort of inadvertently, after my husband died.
Well, you know, backing up a little with the original memoir that you wrote, and when you got the feedback from agents that this isn't dramatic enough, or, you know, you need more drama, were you there trying to brainstorm how can I do that to it, or did you go, you know what, I'm going to put this aside and just wait, and you started working on other things? So what did you do with that sort of feedback before you actually had the dramatic thread to your story?
Well, the reality of that is I didn't learn that from the agent until a couple weeks after Marcus died.
Mm-hmm.
So I had already turned in the first half of the manuscript to her and had been waiting to hear back, and so finally she did get back to me. She did hear about my husband's death, but in fact, at that point she said, you know, why don't you write about Marcus? And yeah, he died 2 weeks ago. No. So I did nothing with this book for a while. It just, you know, it's so funny because Word, you know, I work in Word, and they do the timestamp, you know, so the last day I ever worked on that manuscript was August 18, 2009 at 6 p.m., you know, closed it down for the day, took my dogs for a walk, and Marcus died the next morning, and, you know, at that timestamp stood there for the longest time. I did not even touch that. I didn't really write at all, except what I did was I started blogging. I already had a blog, and it's called The World Needs More Pie.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already writing about pie and life stories, you know, just these funny little anecdotes about how pie affects people, or things I've done with pie that made people happy, or just funny little stories. Like, I had interviewed once for a PR job, and I baked the guy. This was during the time that I had the pie baking sabbatical, because, you know, let's face it, I really couldn't live off a minimum wage in LA. So I baked this PR president a pie, and then he, instead of hiring me, tells me that I should open a pie shop, you know. So the ways that pie has affected me, my life, mm-hmm. like, kept me from getting a corporate job. So, yeah. So I had this blog, and I was trying to write these funny, quirky little stories about pie and how it's affected my life. And instead of writing about pie, I started writing about grief. And I needed a place to go with my feelings and with this process I was going through. And just as a writer, I that just was my natural element. I was writing in my journal. I was writing letters to Marcus after he died, just stay connected to him. And, you know, but what I found was my greatest outlet was the blog, because I started getting a remarkable number of comments and emails from people that have found my blog and said, thank you so much for writing so honestly about your grief. It's helped me so much. And so I kept going, you know. It's like, oh, people like this. Mm-hmm. Who knew? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm writing about wanting to kill myself, and people are like, oh, that's great. Thank you so much. Now I don't feel so alone.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I find so important about being a writer is honesty and sharing and helping people feel less alone and helping people feel like they're not crazy and helping us feel more connected to one another. I think it's a beautiful gift. My mom doesn't necessarily agree. She thinks I tell people too much, but you know, now I can wave my memoir under her nose and go, well, I know, but people like it when I tell them too much.
Yeah,
here's my book, you know. That's what I tell writers now, because when I do my book readings and book events, you know, and people ask how to get into writing, and I know maybe it's not like, you know, the academic approach, but I always say, start a blog. It's free, and you get that instant gratification of being published, and, you know, you have a way to sort of show your work and get feedback on it without being in a writer's group. And, you know, writer's groups can be hard to join. I looked for them myself, and, you know, they don't always work out, and sometimes people are a little too critical in a way, but I find that blogs good because it keeps you in the writing practice, and, you know, it keeps you motivated because, you know, you've got an audience sort of building, and it helps you hone a theme, and when you get that kind of reader feedback, it, you know, it helps you hone in even more. So, mm-hmm. So the blog was incredibly instrumental in what's now Making Peace, my memoir that was just published, because I used a lot of the material from the blog. In fact, I remember having a conversation with you back months and months ago, maybe it was even more than a year ago. You're like, well, aren't you worried if you publish this stuff on the blog that, you know, that's going to take away from the book? And what I found out was not at all. You know, I had to actually rework. So the material might have been on my blog, like in theme, but in reality, I had to rework all of that and fit it into a narrative. And so, you know, I had to enhance a lot of it as well. But thank God I had that blog, because otherwise I would have, you know, I don't know what I would have relied on for material. You know, it was all there, and the emotion was all raw because I wrote it in real time, and so it was really helpful.
You're listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine, and I'm with Beth Howard. Her new memoir is Making Peace, a memoir of love, Loss and Pie, published by Harlequin. So then talk about, like, blog voice versus book voice. I mean, you know, because over and over you hear, you know, if you're writing a blog, don't use the same voice in your book that you have used in your blog. And you talked about taking material from the blog and reworking it for the book.
Yeah, but you know what that sounds like to me? That's like another one of those shoulds. It's like a rule, like it's like a recipe that says you should refrigerate your dough, you know, and this thing, you should use a different voice. And like, just don't listen to any of that, you know? Your voice is your voice. That's as far as I'm concerned, it's the same voice. It's just, like I said, it's constructed in a slightly different pattern, you know? It's what I did, the difference between my blog and my book, and I will tell you, I lifted some of it directly from the blog, so to me the voice is the same. It's that I did a lot of backstory, filled in with backstory. So what I did was, you know, when you do a proposal, you have to do a table of contents, so you have to submit that in the proposal process, and that was, I thought, oh, you know, I don't need that. Well, that was one of the most helpful things for me, was to have that table of contents to fall back on, to refer back to, actually, because there were times where I would write, and then I would just go, okay, well, I'm done with that chapter, I guess, so where do I go from here? And I'd be completely baffled, and then I go, no, don't be baffled. Go back to your table of contents and have a look. So you could see where the story went in chronological order, but there was a lot of sort of room to digress, like one does in a regular conversation. You know, oh, yeah, and that reminds me that the time I, you know, got caught stealing apples, or, you know, so you just fill in backstory, and then you come back to the present, and then you fill in backstory and come back to the present, and it's just kind of this interesting little spiral pattern that you're continually moving forward along a timeline. So that was the sort of structure for me, but in terms of the blog voice, I you know, it's just, what's interesting is it is the same, you know. It is still me. It's still my voice. It's still my emotion. It's still my raw, fiery spirit coming through, regardless of what the medium. But, yeah, I think the blog's really helpful. I always remember hearing a writer, Mary Roach, speak, and she talked about the daunting experience of writing a book. She had written a lot for magazines, and she just couldn't fathom how she was ever going to be able to pull a whole book together. And a friend of hers told her, it's just a whole bunch of your magazine articles put together in between two covers. So I think about that a lot. That was really a helpful thing for me to hear. So as far as I'm concerned, this book is a bunch of blog posts between two book covers, you know. So it kind of takes the pressure off in a way. You're like, well, I can weave together a collection of my essays and somehow, you know, create a narrative. And I think that's the key, is coming up with the transitions and the chronology, I guess. In my case, it was a chronological story to help you find the way to put it all together.
Mm-hmm. And did your editor ever ask you in terms of, you know, did you include your blog here, or did it just never come up?
It came up in the contract.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, when is somebody going to ask me this? You know? And then they said, oh, I know what it was. The contract said that you had to verify that none of this work had ever been published in another forum. And I told my agent, I go, well, I can't say that because I've had a lot of this stuff on my blog. And so then they went back and they said, you know, except for X percentage that was on the blog.
Uh-huh.
So they basically just changed the contract to accommodate that, but they were fine with it. And the interesting thing too is, you know, and kind of what's baffling to me now that the book is out is, hello, I already wrote all this. You guys already know my story. It's been out there, you know, but it's very different when you present it in a book form, you know. That's the irony. I'm just like, but it's not even new information to you. If you were a follower of my blog, this wouldn't be a new story, and yet it is. It's a very different way of telling the story, and there is so much more backstory. There's so much more room to go sort of deeper, and again, it's not that it's a 3X structure. I wish it were that easy, but it's that it is a start and finish kind of thing. Like, it's a conflict and then resolution. And that's how I like to write. I mean, writing has always been like that for me, sort of a way to resolve issues and life's questions. And you know, you can accuse me of using my writing as therapy, as one of my college professors did. To me, well, that's what an essay is, you know. It's just taking a question and examining it and trying to make sense of life. And I think that's one of the great pleasures I get from writing, is just the, you know, finding life lessons, finding meaning and sharing that sort of revelation with your readers.
Mm-hmm.
As if I have any answers. I mean, I don't, but it's just, you know, certain takes on things.
Sure. Well, I'd love to hear you read, and I'm sure everyone out there would too. Would you read a little bit from the book?
Yeah, how about it? Should I start with the intro?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, there's a swear word in here, so I'm going to...
You're going to bleep it.
Bleep at the end. I think actually my agent told me, yeah, you had a review on Amazon that was somebody was complaining about your bad language. They edited out about half of my swear words, so that was, you know, pretty tame considering. But all right, this is the prologue. And just a little background on this, too. I wrote this a long time before I ever sat down and wrote the actual book. Probably wrote it even maybe almost a year before I sat down to write the book. So I had this little nugget, and it ended up being what I started with, but I had it for months and months, and I just couldn't go any further. And then, you know, then one day it all magically happened when I sat down on my kitchen table with my laptop, but we can get to that later.
Okay.
Here is the prologue. I blame pie. If it wasn't for banana cream pie, I never would have been born. If my mom hadn't made my dad that pie, the one with the creamy vanilla pudding, loaded with sliced bananas and covered in a mound of whipped cream, the one that prompted him to propose to her, I wouldn't be here. Think about it. The anatomical shape of bananas, the pudding so luscious and moist, the cream on top as soft as a pillow on which to lie down and inspire certain sensuous acts. My parents were virgins and intended to stay that way until they exchanged vows at the altar. That pie made wedding plans urgent. If it wasn't for that pie, they may never have gotten married and had kids, had me. If I had never been born, I never would have learned to make pie, not just banana cream, but apple and strawberry rhubarb and chocolate cream and peach crumble and many others. If I had never been born, I never would have grown up to become a writer and gotten that job at the .com that paid so well, but stressed me out so much that I quit to become a full-time pie baker in Malibu. If I hadn't gotten that baking job, I never would have made pies for Barbara Streisand and Steven Spielberg, and I never would have taken time off to go on that road trip, the one where I ended up at Crater Lake National Park and met Marcus Eichen that night in the hotel lobby. If I had never met Marcus, never fallen in love with him and his almond-shaped green eyes, exotic German-British accent, and those odd yet elegant leather hiking boots that laced up at the sides, I never would have invited him to join me at my friend's wedding in Tuscany, and thus I never would have taken the train from Italy to his apartment in Stuttgart, Germany, carrying the pie I baked him, the apple one heaped high with fruit, drowning in its own juices and radiating the seductive scent of cinnamon, the one that made him realize I was like no woman he'd ever met before and that he couldn't live without me, the pie that prompted him to propose to me. If it wasn't for pie, I never would have been born. I never would have married Marcus and moved to Germany, to Oregon, and then to Mexico with him. If I had never married him, I would not have been the one listed as the emergency contact, the one who got the phone call that day. I never would have learned how a call from a medical examiner can mean only one thing, how harsh the word would sound in my ears, deceased, he'd said, and how that word would haunt me, change my life, change me. If I had never been born, I never would have known what it feels like to lose Marcus, never known what his sexy, athletic body, the body I had made love to hundreds of times, looked like lying in a casket, cold, hard, lifeless, eventually cremated, his ashes buried, never to be seen again. If only my mom hadn't made my dad that banana cream pie. Bleep pie.
Thank you so much. That was that's wonderful. That was Beth Howard reading from Making Peace, a memoir of love, loss, and pie. Was this always the title? I'm trying to remember. It wasn't the title, the original title of the book, was it?
No, it wasn't. This title came from a painting that a friend of mine made for me. She called it Make Peace, and it was a little pie baking all alone in an oven, and it looked like it was suspended in the air. It was just really a remarkable painting, which hangs in my house, and she called it Make Peace, and I asked her, hey, can I borrow that title? I think that would work really well, Making Peace, and it's P-I-E-C-E.
Mm-hmm.
So I really liked that, and I really love her painting, and I was really wanting her painting to be somewhere represented in the book, but it didn't make it. Oh, well, next time.
Next time. We're going to take a real quick break, so everyone out there, stay with us. We'll be back with Beth Howard and more of her and her book and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So don't go anywhere.
Come back, baby, please don't go. No, I love you, darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. Gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Thank you. talking, one month better than a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
I lost my mojo.
You lost it?
I lost it.
Where'd it go?
I don't know, but I found it. I found it on Writers on Writing.
Writers on Writing?
Wednesday mornings at 9 a.m. in the morning.
With Barbara DeMarco Barrett and Marie Stone?
That's them.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit KUCI.org or KUCITalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. We are broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. We're on the web at KUCI.org and on iTunes at College Radio. And before I bring Beth Howard back on to talk more about Making Peace, a memoir of love, loss, and pie, I want to tell you about a few things going on this coming weekend in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles Times Festival of Books is taking place Saturday and Sunday. And, thousands, hundreds, so many panels that you can attend. The price of the ticket is probably $1, I think, if you go to Ticketmaster, just for the service charge. If you don't want to get tickets, don't want to hassle, just go up there, stand in the line next to the panel, and as people don't show up, you'll be let into the panel. It's pretty simple. It's at USC. And you can even take a train up if you're in Orange County or up in Northern California, take a train down and or drive or walk or bicycle, whatever. And my panel is on Sunday, 12:30, I think it is. It's a fiction panel with Pam Houston and a couple of other fiction writers. And I don't know where it is, but it's somewhere there on Sunday that should be good. And just so many good ones. I'm looking forward to both days there to soaking it all in. Then, next weekend in New York, the American Society of Journalists and Authors Writers Conference takes place every year. It's in New York City at the Roosevelt Hotel. I'll be there as well, I hope, if this cold goes away. And you can find out more at asja.org. Pen on Fire Writer Salon in May. May 15th, we have two memoirists, James Brown, who was on my Literary Orange panel this past weekend here at UCI, and Claire Bidwell Smith. Her book is The Inheritance of Grief. It's a memoir, and she'll be down. She was on the show maybe a month ago, so you could probably find the podcast and listen if you like before you commit to coming to the salon. But more info is at penonfire.com. Click on the Writer's Salon and you'll find out more. And I know we have a few seats left, so you can register there. I'm going to bring Beth back on. She is author of Making Peace, a memoir of love, loss, and pie, published by Harlequin. Hello.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. You know, it's interesting, Harlequin publishing memoirs now, because I think a lot of readers recognize Harlequin as being a publisher of romance, and they have certainly branched out into other areas. And they have been so behind you for this book.
That's true. The nonfiction division of Harlequin is relatively new. I think it's about 2 or 3 years old. They've had a number of cookbooks. I think they've just only had a handful of memoirs. I know one was called The Girl's Guide to Homelessness by a girl here in Southern California.
Sure.
And, it's relatively new. And my book actually went to auction, so I had 4 bids. It was the worst possible time you could sell a book. It was the week that Borders declared bankruptcy, so I was told that, yeah, sorry, that was tough luck, but oh well, they still had four bidders on my book. And my agent really wanted to go with Harlequin because she felt the fact that it was a relatively new imprint, that they were going to be putting a lot more resources behind their books, that this one would get a lot more attention than maybe a different publisher, and that, of course, given the precarious state of publishing and, financial stability, that Harlequin is in really good shape. And so it was just a, sort of business-wise, it was a good choice to make. I hesitate to say this publicly, but I will, because, this is to help other writers. But, I was a little concerned about the stigma of the romance novel thing. I don't know, it was hard for me at first to say, yeah, Harlequin's my publisher, without, it's hard to say that without making an apology almost for it. But it's been a really good experience. And, like I said, they've put a lot of resources behind this, good marketing campaign. And I know it's been a good choice. It's really not about who publishes it. It's about the support you get once you get your contract. So mm-hmm. that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And, I'd like to see them do a little bit more in terms of distinguishing their nonfiction brand from the romance brand, but mm-hmm. That's really not up to me, and it certainly hasn't caused any problems in terms of being, getting publicity for the book or anything like that. I mean, there's been, nobody's ever said anything, oh, Harlequin, no, nothing like that. It's, it says memoir right in the title, so it's pretty clear it's not a romance novel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there's lots of romance in it, so
it qualifies,
right?
Well,
I hope that wasn't too honest of an answer. I have to be careful about that. But I just, I want other writers to know that it's, really, it is about the business of getting your book published more than anything else once you get to that stage.
Yeah, and these days, I'll tell you, I mean, a lot of self-published books come to me for the show. And for the most part, even if the topic is right there and engrossing, there really still seems to be so many problems with self-published books, because I hear authors say, well, I don't want to go with this publisher because or that, and I'm just going to put it out myself. And I just go, well, really think about that, because do you have the proofreaders and the copy editors and the art directors and everybody else on board to make it a beautiful book? And
right.
Anyway,
they also did advertising in the Baker & Taylor catalog, and I'm sure they've done advertising in other places I haven't even seen. They paid for me to go to the American Bookseller Association Winter Conference, and I was their featured author there. Each publisher gets to bring one author. So it definitely gives you credibility to be with a publishing company as opposed to self-publishing.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't we all have that thing where we just go, forget it, I'm just going to self-publish my book?
Yeah.
And it's, of course, that's the instant gratification thing, but there's so much support you get from a publisher that really makes it worthwhile. And for example, right now I'm on my book tour for 6 weeks, and no one gets to do book tours anymore, really, but Harlequin paid for me to go on a book tour.
Mm-hmm.
And not just a book tour, like I'm driving the RV that my husband left behind, and it's basically a character in my story,
right.
The RV, I call it the Beast. Well, the Beast is still alive and well, and the Beast is what I'm traveling in for 6 weeks, and Harlequin paid to have a wrap done on the RV, so I've got like book promo.
Oh, really?
All
I can't
over
wait to see it.
This RV, and I mean, that's huge. That's a really big contribution that they're making to the support of this book. So I definitely recognize all the benefits of being with a publishing house like this.
Yeah, definitely. And they created a beautiful book for you, which I just love it. I think it's great. I think it looks good. You want to pick it up.
Yeah, thank you. Well, and I had my own issues with the cover. And
sure.
I didn't want it to look too much like a cookbook, and, I don't know. I'm happy with how it turned out, but I had my own sort of creative struggle with this, and you have to sort of pick your battles. And like, even when I first got the shipment of books and I saw the ragged edges of the paper, and I was like, well, I kind of had pictured it more contemporary, and now I've come to love the rough edges, of the... got a lot of texture to it, and it has a little bit of an old-fashioned feel, which is fitting with the pie theme.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about just the the technique and the craft of writing memoir, because memoir is certainly not a genre for those who are shy about revealing themselves, and because it's, you know, it's all you. A memoir, yeah, you can write a memoir about somebody else, about a relationship, but it's still all you. And you seem to have no real problem with revealing yourself.
I have nothing to hide. I don't know what to say about that. Like I said before, my mom thinks I share too much, and, you know, what I find is, my experience has always been positive. You know, nothing I've ever shared has come to bite me in the butt, if you will. You know, nothing's ever stopped me from living a rich and full life. You know, the more honest I am, it seems like the more benefits come my way somehow. It's kind of ironic, but I just feel like by being open, then you allow other people to be open too. You allow relationships to happen because of your openness. I just find that it's only enhanced my life and not hindered my life to be so honest. You know, and this book is brutally honest in many ways. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't have any problem with it. I also, just in terms of writing the memoir, you're asking kind of the approach to it. It's like, I kind of try to tell people, it's like writing a letter to a friend. You know, think of it that you're just having a conversation with your best friend, and these are the things you want to tell them. And, you know, it's sort of confiding, but it's also just, you know, it's just getting purging. Maybe that's it. Purging.
Mm-hmm. So. Hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it does seem that voice, well, there are a few things. I mean, one is being able to reveal yourself, and the other is voice, because, and having a story, of course, and it's sort of like, well, what's the story, you know, that's going to be of interest to somebody else? What is the universal aspect,
right,
I suppose, which, you know, sometimes can escape writers who are working on a memoir. They're like, well, it's about my, you know,
want to read this.
Yeah, it's about my parents and how they met. Yeah, but what's
but
the story?
Like, I also have to quote another writer that I heard speak once, and that was Sebastian Younger, and he was talking about The Perfect Storm. I heard him on a panel years ago, and he said when he was writing the book, who's ever going to want to read this? You know, he was getting down on himself, and everyone, of course, just burst into laughter because, you know, it was a blockbuster bestseller. And so that's the thing. I think you just have to brush those voices aside. Write it for you, you know. Stop thinking about your audience. When I tell people, you know, oh, start a blog, and, you know, like I was saying earlier about practice your writing craft through just blogging and having that self-publishing experience, and, oh, but who's going to read it? And I'm like, okay, that's your problem right there. You know, don't think about who's going to read it. You know, just write it for you because you feel so compelled to tell your story. You can't think about who your audience is. I mean, you know, yes, a proposal, when you write the proposal, they make you describe your demographic for the book. So, you know, you do sort of have to have maybe some idea, but that's the kind of thing where I have to brush that aside as well. You know, who's going to read this book? It doesn't matter. Write it because you feel compelled to write it, and that it's bursting to get out of you.
And like you said, write it as if you're writing to a friend, because,
right,
you know, a friend that you would want to tell what's going on in as much detail as possible, because the detail is the thing. You know, it's like sometimes I think writers tend more toward the generic as opposed to getting way in terms of detail about place and detail about what they're going through.
I think, yeah, because on that first round, that first attempt at doing that pie memoir, you know, she said, you need to go deeper. And now I understand what that means, you know, and that's the part where you do reveal more and not censor yourself so much and not ask yourself, oh, you know, who's going to read this and what are people going to think? You can't think that way. You can't put those blocks on yourself. You just have to write it and be honest.
Mm-hmm. Before I forget, tell everybody about watching your goings-on and such on Facebook, because I think you have some links to some TV stuff you've been doing, and just, you know, it's linking to everything else. Is it The World Needs More Pie on Facebook?
Yes, okay. It's The World Needs More Pie. And that's a Facebook page, so you don't have to be friends with me. You just can go and like the page. So as I've been traveling on my book tour, I've been posting the, you know, sort of city to city where we are now, and, you know, the pictures from the road, and people have been really enjoying the sort of traveling along vicariously. And then I've been doing a lot of TV appearances and making a lot of pie on TV. Everybody wants a pie demo, so lots of free pie lessons. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll get little clips here and there of me showing you how to make dough or, you know, how I peel apples. And
so. I tuned into this Channel 7, I think, in San Francisco.
Where I actually got to sit down on a couch and not make pie for a change. And you know why? Because somebody else was already booked on the show to make cupcakes. So I'm like, uh-oh, they're going to ask me about the pie versus cupcake thing, which luckily they didn't, you know, because I don't really like to get into all that. But, yeah, so I sat on the couch and got to wear a pretty dress. And
yeah, well. And you're very engaging. And it was great to see you and to see you in the midst of your tour. But talk a little bit about the promo aspect, because promotion is another one of those things that I think a lot of writers are really just against or repelled by. And it's such an important aspect of publishing these days that you really can't, you can't be too repelled by it, I think. And it may be best to just adopt it with a smile and say, you know, I'll do what I can. But talk about what you've done in terms of promotion or your, perhaps, approach.
Well, I can tell you, you won't even get a book deal unless you're already doing promotion, unless you already have a platform built for yourself, and that's what they call it, a platform. And yes, you can detest it all you want, but I promise you, you know, it's not enough just to be a brilliant writer. And by the way, I don't consider myself a brilliant writer. I'm just told my story, and that's it. But it's just that you need to have a sort of a built-in audience. It's like if you're a hairdresser, you know, and you go to rent a chair somewhere, you have to kind of bring your own following. I don't know. That's maybe a bad analogy, but they want to know that you've been published before. That, you know, maybe you've got so many followers on Twitter and Facebook, and they just want to know. Like, for example, my blog. They were very interested in the numbers on my blog, and where I had, you know, and because of my story is somewhat unique in that we haven't touched on this yet, but I moved back to my roots in Iowa, rural Iowa, and I live in a famous house, the American Gothic House, and because I had moved into that house completely unwarranted in terms of, you know, thinking that it would cause all this commotion and attention and, you know, interest from press, but I moved to a place, and that actually sort of raised my profile a little bit. I had no idea that was going to happen, but there you go. So, you know, it is about having some kind of visibility and having some kind of numbers to show. So that's why, again, I say, hey, why not start a blog? It's free, and there's a way to build some, you know, some visibility with that. And the Facebook, of course, is good. And, you know, honing in on your theme, also good.
So what would you suggest to somebody who perhaps is writing a memoir, who does not have a blog, who perhaps maybe their job during the day, maybe they're, a therapist, maybe they're a waitress, maybe they're something, and they need to think about platform but don't know how to think about platform in terms of how it might work with the memoir they're writing? I mean, where would you suggest they start?
I would say probably try to get an essay published in a magazine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good way. If you're already a writer, you're already writing, you're writing a memoir, then essentially that you could write an essay for a magazine. Maybe that's easier said than done, but, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge national magazine, but I think getting your work out there and published is a really helpful way to build credentials as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you're proving your, you know, you're a proven entity if you've got something already vetted by somebody else. A published article is one good way to do that.
Mm-hmm. True. That's really true. And essays are a great way to start, and essays also bridge into memoir. So
right.
There you go. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's daunting.
Like my memoir is basically a collection of my essays, but like I said, it's the transitions between the essays that provide the connective tissue to make it really flow as a full narrative with a beginning, a middle, and end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Okay. Do you want to read for another couple of minutes?
Oh, no.
No?
I'm just saying, oh, no, because I never know where to start.
Well, let's see. I have the book right in front of me.
Neither do I, but I don't know. Everything seems so out of context, you know, because the story is woven so much, you know, like a like I said, the digressions, and something relates back to something I said earlier in the book.
Well, you know, then, instead of reading, talk about those transitions, because you said earlier in terms of, you know, thinking about a book, thinking about a memoir as perhaps being a collection of essays, and you have to pay attention to transitions. In terms of what you did, I mean, because I could see a lot of your pieces working as standalone pieces, as mm-hmm. standalone essays. Then
they are standalone essays.
Well, then talk about arranging the book, and then transitions. Mm-hmm. You know, transitioning from one to the next. I mean, did you like have them all and lay them all out on the floor and go, okay, what? How can I put this together? And the current story, which may be, I don't know, dealing with grief. Mm-hmm. How will everything work with sort of the present story, which is the story of the present, which is dealing with grief.
Right. Well, you know, it's chronological in a sense, like I said, but that's the part that's interesting, because I don't even tell you until the end of the book how Marcus and I met, you know, about our first encounter. And I just think, I couldn't have planned that, you know. I couldn't mm-hmm. have planned that I was going to wait until almost the end of the book. Somebody reviewed it, they said it's like she tells the story of their meeting in backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even realize I was doing it, so it's almost hard to explain it.
Was that a criticism?
No, not at all.
Okay, good, because I liked it.
No, it wasn't. It was just kind of like I reveal a little bit at a time, but it's kind of because it's told in flashbacks, and I found it even for myself, I was surprised. I'm like, wow, how did it end up all the way at the end of the book, how Marcus and I met, you know? And yet it worked that way. So, I would say that roadmap of having... I knew where I was starting, and I knew I was going to end in Iowa at the American Gothic House where I lived. That's mm-hmm. what I knew. And then I wrote my last chapter, which is more like, I don't know, more of like the present time. Well, it is, you know, at that point it was the present time, but I remember going for a walk with my dogs and coming up with this very clear idea of how I was going to end my book. Like, walking is very helpful, by the way. When I walk my dogs, it helps me distill all my ideas after a long writing session. Then I can sort of muddle things through mm-hmm. my mind mm-hmm. out when I'm walking in nature. So just a little tip right there for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I had this ending, and like I said, I had the beginning. I also knew for quite a while that I was going to start my first chapter with the three words, "I killed my husband." Oh, that's four words, sorry. I killed my husband. And just, I don't know. How do you explain those things? As a writer, I think you just have to, I think you have to take time away from the computer. I do think you have to sort of let the thoughts distill and compose the story in your head first. I mean, that's how I work. I can't say that everybody does it, but, you know, I've been to writing classes where they tell you, you know, if you're not sitting at your computer writing, then you're not writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I don't agree with that. You know, I'm writing in my head constantly. I write blog posts in my head for hours before I actually sit down at the computer.
Mm-hmm.
So I say that's part of this process too, and coming up with the transitions. In my case, because the book was chronological, and because I had a lot of these standalone essays, I had to find a way to work them together. And I had one writing teacher say, "Mind the gap." And I thought about that a lot when I was writing too. There are some gaps where you go from one chapter to the next, and you skip a little bit of time. You don't have to have every single detail to the, and then I went to the bed, and then I got up, and then, you know, you don't have to have all the minutia in there. So I think you can have some gaps, but just not too gaping. And that was really good advice that I followed and thought about a lot. And the other advice I had, which I just found the very most helpful thing, was there are 1,000 ways to tell a story. This is one way, and there are 999 others. So if anybody wants to criticize my book for the way it's written, I go, yeah, this is just one way. You know, yeah, I could have told this in a million other ways, and this is the way I did it. And I think that's a really helpful way to forgive yourself, too, for not being perfect. It's like, no, this is, you know, this is one way, and this was the way I did it, and I'm happy with how it turned out. I mean, I look back, I go, yeah, there are other ways I could have done it. And I look back now, and I go, well, I think I might have changed that place there. But, you know, I like that. You know, it's about sort of taking the pressure off.
Yeah. Yeah, and, yeah. I mean, I like the way you did it too. And I'm curious if there were any surprises. I mean, when you started the book and or when you got the book deal and you had to write, you know, finish the whole book and you went through drafts, did anything come out that surprised you, whether in the story or the process or anything, you know, in relation to this book?
Well, I feel like I got lucky in the editing process in that my editor was fairly hands-off. I mean, rightly so, she cut out half the swear words. Like, okay, yeah, I get it. But, you know, she was pretty lenient with me when I wanted to pick my battles. You know, she let me win most of them, and so I thought I was pretty lucky in that. So I think that was surprising. What was surprising, too, is they didn't want to see the manuscript until it was completely done. Like, mm-hmm. I sold it. Well, here's the other surprising thing. I thought a memoir you had to sell as a finished manuscript. So I was surprised, number one, that I could sell it based on the proposal in the first couple of chapters. And then I was surprised that they didn't want, you know, sections of the book a little, as I was writing it, you know, that they would be more hands-on. They were actually very hands-off, which worked great for me. I was surprised at my own discipline that I was able to sit still for so long. You know, I basically worked almost three solid months at my kitchen table writing, and I never got dressed. You know, I just sat in my bathrobe and my fleece split pants all day and just, you know, cranked it out, and I was very disciplined about that, and I was really proud of myself for having the stick-to-itness to do that. And so, but I had a goal, you know, and I took it very seriously, and I knew that I only had a limited amount of time. Like, I didn't have the luxury of mm-hmm. having endless amount of time to work on it, and I didn't want endless time. You know, this is a hard book anyway because it is about grief, and I think probably now the biggest surprise is promoting the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's been so emotionally painful, and I did not expect that. I just had come from Seattle and Portland on my book tour, and I was at Broadway Books on Broadway in Portland, and guess what? That's right across the street from the funeral home where we had Marcus's mm-hmm. American mm-hmm. service. So that was really tough for me to be back in Portland. And, you know, I have a lot of very, very good friends there. It's where I spent my 1 year of grieving, and that's where I got grief counseling. It features very prominently in the book, that whole part of the story. And I thought, well, I've already done the grieving work. How bad could it be? And I got back there, and it was just emotional overload. So yeah, that's been really tough. I didn't expect that I would be reliving all this grief mm-hmm. every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, people come to me with their grief stories as well, and I'm really happy that my book is helping others. I think that's what I hang on to at the end of the day. It's like, it's not about my book being a bestseller, or, you know, or it's not for me about, you know, how well is it selling. It's just, is it helping people? You know,
yeah.
That's what keeps me going, and that's what keeps driving me forward, because sometimes it's so painful. I just want to go home and go back to bed under my covers in the American Gothic house and just, you know, live a quiet life again. And my life is not quiet. It's getting busier and busier, and haven't had any time to rest. And now people are asking me to come and speak to their grief groups. And, you know, it's...
yeah.
I just keep thinking, well, you know, this is my purpose now, and I'm being called to do this, and that the book is, you know, propelling me forward in that way. You know, what can I say? I don't know. It's that's the way life happened, and I'm trying to make the most out of it still, and it's, I do long for a quiet life, and I don't think it's going to be like that anymore. Go figure.
Well, it's just been wonderful having you on the show, and I'll be seeing you in a couple days, and I can't wait for that. And thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, right. You're going to have a pie lesson.
We're having a pie lesson. So so I will see you soon, and thank you so much, and continued good luck with your wonderful book.
Thank you for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
You're
thank
sure
you,
welcome. Okay. That was Beth Howard. Her book is Making Peace, A Memoir of Love, Loss, and Pie, published by Harlequin. That's all the time we have today. I'm going to end with an epigraph from her book. It's by David Mamet, and he said, "We must have pie. Stress cannot exist in the presence of pie." So until next time, thank you for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine.